So I thought that today I would touch upon perhaps a variety of different halakhic issues instead of just speaking about one issue, because there's so many interesting sugyas on this daf. So I wanted to start with an esoteric one. The Gemara in Chagiga says that Tamid Chacham Apa Pishesarach Tarasa Tamid Chacham Shesarach Ein Tarasa Nimeset. That if you have a Tamid Chacham who goes astray, who commits averus, so the Torah of that individual is not nimeset, which would seem to indicate that that person's Torah that they taught still has value, and whatever inspiration people were able to derive still is considered to be valuable. This question comes up, unfortunately, sometimes bizman is it. You have great rabbinic figures who have unfortunate downfalls in terms of their own personal lives, in terms of things that might occur. So then the question posed by Talmidim is, to what degree is the Torah still valuable? So that Gemara indicates that the Torah is still valuable. Maybe there's a little bit of a raya from today's Gemara. The Gemara talks about Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Says, Tanan al tamin ba'atzmacha yomoscha. You shouldn't have faith in yourself until the very last moment. The person always has to be worried, like David HaMelech. He says, Lulei Amanti, right? That maybe the Shem Yigram HaChet, the person always has to be worried that maybe they'll succumb to a Beira. Sheharei Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Shimesh B'Kohuna Gadola Shmonim Shana. He was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years. Lebesov Nasa Tzeduki. And then at the end, he became a Tzeduki. So this seems to indicate that at the end he betrayed his original values and he became somebody who didn't have the requisite emuna if he joined the sect of Tzidukim. And yet, nonetheless, we know that the Mishnayos at the end of Ma'aser She'eni talk about all kinds of takanos that were made by Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and he's counted by the... seems to be counted by the Rambam in his Hakdama LePerush HaMishnayos, when he gives the klal of all of the great Chachamim of every generation, and he's listing all the Baalei Mesorah, so he seems to count Yochanan Kohen Gadol. However, this is not necessarily Mukhrach, because the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayos of Ma'aser She'eni gives a whole historical lineage regarding who this Yochanan Kohen Gadol is, after Shimon HaTzadik, whatever. And the Kesef Mishnah explains that the reason why the Rambam gives the whole genealogy is because he's trying to explain that this is not the same Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that it's a different Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So we don't have a raya from the fact that the Rambam lists Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that he's necessarily still counting him among the Baalei Mesorah. It could be that that's a different Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who is the one who established all of the takanos and who's quoted in the Mishnayos and the Tosefta and elsewhere. So that's a question. There is not necessarily a uniformity of opinion regarding the identity of this Yochanan Kohen Gadol, or regarding the significance of the fact that he became a tzeduki. There was a periodical called Apirion that was a Torah journal from many decades ago, and the editor of the journal was somebody named Miller, I think maybe Shlomo Miller. So he would write Divrei Torah from time to time. He'd write lots of Divrei Torah since he was the editor, so he could write as many articles as he wanted in his own journal. So he had a perush in Pirkei Avos. So in the very first Mishnah of Pirkei Avos, and I think maybe the second volume of Apirion in the 1920s, when he's talking about Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai and Masra the Yoshua, so he has the whole arichus about what it means to be worthy of being able to be moser, that you have to have a full Kabbalah, and that means being pure and pristine in terms of your own mitos. And if you're not pure and pristine, then you're not zoche to be among the Baalei HaMesorah. And he homiletically explains the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Dalet along these lines, which says, Tamid Chacham Shenitzer Rebbe V'Avigdol Chayav Misa, Tamid Chacham has a stain on his garments. Is that only to be taken literally? So he understands it more spiritually, that a Tamid Chacham who has a stain on his spiritual garment, that somehow he is tarnished in terms of his spiritual legacy. So Chayav Misa meaning that he's not going to be kept alive as one of the Bali Misorahs, one of the transmitters of the Misorah. So if you understand like this homiletical message, then it would follow that you couldn't really list Yochanan Kohen Gadol as one of the Bali Misorah. In fact, the Rambam seems to take the position that if somebody had a serious spiritual stain, they can't be considered among the Bali Misorah. The Rambam, when he lists off in his Hakdama LePerush HaMishnayos all the different Chachamim, so he has different categories, different Klolim. So after he has his klal, I believe it's his klal sheni, where he's listing off various chachamim, who are people who either gave over some mussar or darshin something, and therefore they're considered to be among the Bali Misorah for that distinction. So he writes that there are a couple I didn't mention, and one of them is Elisha Acher Lomaninu Oso. I didn't count him. I didn't count him among the other Bali Masori Imaklolo Satahora Biglal Ma Shinoda Mimasov, because of what we know about his deeds, that he was somebody who went on horseback behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right in Yom Kippur. He was Mizana with his owner. She said, "I can't believe that you're Elisha ben Avuya. You're an Acher. You've turned into a different person, a different creature altogether." So he's somebody who committed terrible, terrible averos, and because we know that about him, and because his name is so terribly tarnished, therefore his name can't be described. So it's no kasha on the Rambam why he lists Yochanan Kohen Gadol, because he holds that the Yochanan Kohen Gadol is a different Yochanan Kohen Gadol than the one that's mentioned in our Mishnah. The Bnei Yisrael, famously in his homilies on Hanukkah, quotes from Kabbalistic Svarim that say that Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Hasidic Svarim, say that Yochanan Kohen Gadol was in fact the same Yochanan Kohen Gadol, at least the one that from the Hanukkah story of Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who we do mention L'Shevach, and he asks, why is it that we mention his name L'Shevach? So there's a whole explanation that the fact that he went astray to become a Tzeduki wasn't completely his fault. He got misled. It wasn't completely guilty. And also we have a concept of Bra Mizaka Abba, that a son can rehabilitate his father. So Matisyo was Zoche to rehabilitate his father by striking against the Greek tradition, by establishing sanctity in the Beis HaMikdash, in areas where the Tzidukim themselves made their mark by contesting. And because he essentially turned around the Averis, mistaken Averis of his father, who was led astray, therefore the name of Yochanan Kohen Gadol is rehabilitated for that reason. I saw once in the Sefer Moedim Uzmanim by Rav Sternbach when he was writing his essays about Hilchos Chanukah, so he also has a Malamei Zchus. If you look at the Lashon of the Medrash Tanchuma, I believe on Parsha Shlach, says with respect to Yochanan, not Parsha Shlach, Parsha Bishalach, says about Yochanan Kohen Gadol that Amu Alav al Yochanan Kohen Gadol Sheik Melachos Shmonim Shana whatever Nase Tzeduki. So he claims that it could be that he didn't really become a Tzeduki. That we don't have to understand the Gemara as harshly as it's being described, that he accepted upon himself to be a Tzeduki, but it was like Nase. It looked like he was made a Tzeduki. Somehow, whatever he did, he wasn't able to avoid the appearance of impropriety, but he didn't actually become a Tzeduki. That doesn't appear to be Pashup Shat. I don't think it's the way that most understand the Gemara, but I think that those who would understand the Pshat that way would probably be those who would understand that Yochanan Kohen Gadol, mentioned in the Mishnayos at the end of Ma'aser Sheni, is the same as the Yochanan Kohen Gadol mentioned in this Gemara. And there is a little bit of a sense that if a Talmud Chacham goes astray, even though Ein Tarasu Nimesed, to mention the person L'Shevach is questionable, and therefore you have these different approaches to be Malamed Tzchus, that he wasn't so incredibly guilty, that we know that in his case he had been at Tzadik Gomor beforehand, we know that, or the argument that he was only Nase Tzeduki, that it only looked as if he was a Tzeduki. This is used halacha lemaisa, this whole parsha of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, by Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva in Chelek Aleph Siman Sadi Vav in Eben Ezer, where Rav Moshe was asked about some minagim, who doesn't identify the person, it's many decades ago, who had composed a number of very catchy ditties, and that people liked to sing and hum when they went all over the place. And then the contention was that he had gone astray, that he had been this person had also been a sarach, turned from the path, and had become rancid or spoiled. So the question was it still permissible to listen to the songs that he composed? The songs that he composed before he went bad, or the songs that he composed after he went bad? So Rav Moshe quotes from Yochanan Kohen Gadol and says that we see that even though he's assuming, he admits that the Rambam seems to indicate it was a different person, but he assumes that it was the same person. And even though many assume it was the same person, we see that we still learn from his Torah, we still quote him in Mishnayos. So therefore, on that basis, he says that the songs that had previously been composed would not be prohibited from people listening to them. And he goes further and says that he's not so sure that this is a case where the person was sarach or nischametz, where the person went bad, because the major allegation that was hurled against this person was that he performed his concerts in front of men and women together. So he said that even if it's perhaps not the best inyan in the world, he's not sure he would consider that to be on the level of that the person is nischames, that the person has left the fold, has become an apikoros. He said, if it's known that there are inyanei kfira, that a person had become a kofer, had become an apikoros, so then you can argue that they were nischamets, and even then he thinks you could still listen to the songs based on part on Yochanan Kohen Gadol as Araya. But in this case, he said, this sounds like the person succumbed a little bit to Taiba. He gives some sort of an explanation, and that's not quite on the same level as a person who renounces their Judaism. He also points out that even in the case of Elisha ben Avuya, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that actually quotes something, a mimer, in the name of Elisha ben Avuya, which presents perhaps a little bit of a problem for the theory which was articulated by the author of the Apirion piece. But one could be Miyashev, perhaps, while the Gemara says Ein Tarasu Nimeset, that you could still quote something that the person said, that's a different madrega from being considered to be one of the Baalei Mesorah. And even what's quoted in the name of Elisha ben Avuya is not a hora necessarily, it's a midah. Well, what's the midah? Maybe the midah itself is appropriate under the circumstances. The midah is Halomed Let Yelad Lamahu Domed Lidiyo Ksuba Yinayar Chadash, that if somebody learns as a child without a prior record, that would tarnish the learning without any interference. So there, if that's like you put ink on a blank paper, if somebody is older, the diyok suba aniyamokok, then it's like you're writing on a race paper where it doesn't necessarily make the same impression, it doesn't have the same clarity. And we know that Pirkei Avos is made up of statements that characterize a person's life, that characterize the way that the person lived, and that it's descriptive of the person. And we say, Uaya Omer, the Mefarshim point out this means this is the way the person conducted themselves hour after hour, day after day, and we learn something from their lives. So it could be that the Mishnah is just saying this is what we learn from Elisha ben Avuya, that it doesn't stick, it doesn't make an impression as well if all the learning is done in a spirit of interference, because we know the Gemara in Chagiga says that one of the reasons why Elisha ben Avuya eventually went bad was because Zema Yavin lo pasach mipume, that he always had some sort of a heathen or a hedonistic influence that surrounded him, and then when he left the Beis Medrash, he had all of his Sifrei Minin textbooks that were falling out of his hands, that he always took them with him to the Beis Medrash, that it was never completely perhaps a Niyar Chadosh, and maybe that's why we preserve this particular teaching, because this teaching gives us a Musar Haskel about what can happen even to a great Talmid Chacham if you don't teach the person in an untarnished fashion, without interferences and distractions that are antithetical to the Torah that is being absorbed. So that's perhaps one way to be miyashivit Of course, there's also the Gemara in Moed Katan that says that when they were figuring out the parsha of whether for Shmur Rechoka it's necessary for somebody to observe a Beilu Shiva Shloshim after a Shmur Rechoka, so in that context as well, in the Gemara in Moed Katan, Daf Chaf says that they approached Elisha ben Avuya for an answer. However, it could be that if you look at the Gemara carefully, the Gemara says that the answer that he gave, whether we paskin like it or not, but the answer that he gave, I don't think we do, the answer that we gave says, Uzekenim she'imo. It says they approached Elisha ben Avuya, Uzekenim she'imo, and the other Zekenim that were with him. So it could be that the Gemara deliberately goes out of its way to describe that it was Uzekenim she'imo, that he was also accompanied by other Zekenim, in order to not attribute any particular hurrah only to him, given that he's not preserved in the tradition as one of the Baalei Mesorah. So it could be that after a careful analysis even of these various sources, that the idea that was propounded in that homiletic essay of the editor of Apirio is not necessarily off the market. There could be some legitimacy to it, particularly as indicated by the Rambam's comment in his Hakdama the Perush of Mishnayos about Acher. Yes. Nigunim says that it was Nigunim. And then Ramosha goes further to say that since it's only Nigunim and there's no Kedusha here per se, and there are no psukim or divrei kodesh that are emanating from this, so he says that it could be even if the person was a kofir, you could listen to it. So we don't find this chumrah that you can't listen to. So he said, if a Sefer Torah is written by a min, the Rambam says he's sorry if you have to burn it. That's a Sefer Torah. He said, this isn't a Sefer Torah. It's not Dharma Shabbatusha. That was another reason why he thought that it was okay. There's a similar tshuva in the Mishnah Halakos by Rabbi Menashe Klein, in which he has, you have to wonder whether it's exactly the same Shilat, whether it's the same situation. He asked the same question about, is it okay to listen to Nigunim from some Menagin who went bad. So Rabbi Menashe Klein is much more machmir. He says, v'shem yisharm yirkov, you can't have anything to do with him, you shouldn't listen to anything that will remind you of him, you should not listen to it at all. But Moshe takes a much more relaxed approach to this particular Shilat.
Also, with Tamachat Moshe person's like shito change before anybody notices something. So let's say it might be in the year 2000, like he had, you know, he went off the derech in terms of sashkafa, but he was giving shiur until 2010. So at which point do you cut off, you know, how do you analyze when he's
Pashtus is that Ein Taras and Nimesed is talking about before the period in which they went off the derech. If you say after the period they went off the derech, that becomes a much more difficult analysis as to whether really that's something that is nemesed or no. That's much more questionable. Pashtus is that Ein Taras Nemesed embraces what was learned beforehand. It's not clear at all that it embraces what would come after the point of Mius.
But I'm saying, like, even when we identify him as being off the derech, like, usually it went back years before we identified him, you know what I mean? So in other words, like, let's say in 2010, we say, gee, he really went off the derech. But it didn't just happen like a light switch that day in 2010.
Look, the Gemara says even with Acher, it wasn't a light switch. But the assumption is that whatever was learned, taught by Acher, until that point in time, had a certain amount of value. Nonetheless, in terms of how we're going to record it for posterity, we really have taken the name of Elisha ben Avuya off of the charts for most purposes, other than the Mishnah and Avos and that Gemara, which makes a point of saying Uzakenim Shimo. Okay, so that's the first sugya I wanted to touch upon. Secondly, the Gemara here talks about the tefillah of Habinenu. That there was the Gemara has this in a number of places throughout the Masechta, on top Daf Tesayin as well, and Daf Gimel. There seems to be a potential allusion to the tefillah of Habinenu. Tosfos talks about that. Daf Tesayin certainly talks about workers who are being paid good money by their employer, so they're not allowed to take off too much time during the day. And the expectation was that they would say an abridged version of Shmoneh Esrei, which was Habinenu. They said the first three brachos, the last three brachos, and then there was one big bracha in the middle that kind of like our Ala Milchia, kind of includes all of the different themes. And this one bracha in the middle substituted for all of the all the brachos in the middle of Shemona Esrei. So altogether, there are seven brachos in Havinenu. So there's a question about whether or not it's appropriate to say Havinenu or not. The machlokus is brought between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Akiva. It's recorded back on Daf Tezayin Amud Aleph. Rabbi Yehoshua says that anybody could say Havinenu. The Gemara seems to indicate that Rabbi Gamliel has the opinion that it depends upon whether the worker has a lot of free time or only a little bit of free time, whether they're getting paid good money or only they're getting paid lunch money. If they're getting paid lunch money, so then it's okay. You don't have to be so good to the employer, so you could say a Bushmon Esrei. Otherwise, you could say Havinenu. And Rabbi Akiva seems to indicate that it's dependent upon whether it's a submission, whether it's Shigura Bepib or not, whether a person is able to daven Shemona Esrei fluently. In those days, not everybody had a sitter. And if they don't know Shemona Esrei fluently, and they're able to at least have memorized Havinenu when they took the Yedios Klalios exam in school, so then they would be allowed to get away with Havinenu. So the Gemara over here indicates that even though there are at least Shas Hadchak situations in which we would allow Havinenu, Abaye was Layat Allah Abaye Aman de Matzli Havinenu. The Gemara says over here that Abaye gave an imprecation upon anybody who would say Havinenu. So that sounds like maybe we shouldn't do Havinenu. So Tosfos qualifies it a little bit and says, Hani Mili B'masav B'derech Shari. Now that's only if it was in the city. But if a person's B'derech and they're not going to be able to daven all of Shemona Esrei B'derech, there's a lot of distractions, so then we would still allow them to say Havinenu. And the Rambam, when the Rambam codifies these laws in Perek Beis of Hilchos Tefillah, so the Rambam says that if a person was tarud b'dachuk or shekatzra lishono, the person was distracted, or they were in a rush, or they weren't able to formulate all of Shemona Esrei easily, again, perhaps in the days where there was no sitter, so then it would be permissible to say Havinenu. The Rambam, however, in Perek Dalet of Hilchos Tefillah, says that with respect to the workers, all workers are expected to say all of Shemona Esrei nowadays, because the employers are no longer makpid that the workers have to daven a short Shemona Esrei. They don't mind if the tefillah, they want the tefillah hopefully will work for their crops, right? So they don't mind if the workers spend a little bit more time on Shemona Esrei. But in Ein Derech So that with respect to the workers, already in the time of the Rambam, that particular dispensation was already taken away to some degree. And the Be'er Halacha in Shulchan Aruch in Siman Kuf Yud, the Chafetz Chaim points out, V'kayam einogin, says nowadays nobody in any situations, even if the Shah is dachuk, even if it's under pressured circumstances where people are in a rush, that people don't say Havinenu. I think that by and large, most Sidurim don't even carry the Nusuch of Havinenu. We talk about Shigura B'pi, Shemona Esrei, Shigura B'pi call Klal Yisrael practically. Almost everybody from a young age knows Shemona Esrei by heart. But when it comes to Havinenu, most people couldn't say two words of Havinenu, beyond Havinenu. I don't think most people wouldn't be sure. He said, can you guess one more word? They wouldn't be. Maybe say, you know, guess a Kodesh Baruch Hu's name. They wouldn't be sure what other word to add. So the Be'er Halacha says, why is it that nowadays that we don't allow Havinenu? Or the minhag is that people don't say Havinenu, even though Mi'ikar Adin, it was paskin in certain situations it could be said. One of my friends, Rabbi Michael Brewer, wrote a whole book on Havinenu and halakhic innovation. So, I don't know, it's halakhic innovation is a question. What's innovation, not innovation? But there are certain practices that are more popular at certain times and not other times. But he says, She'anu choshishin she'afilu that b'zayin lo yikabin. He says that we're worried that a person is not even going to have the requisite kavana for the seven brachos. What was the reason to allow Havinenu? That a person wouldn't be able to have the perfect kavana for all of Shemona Esrei. So we said, okay, so we'll give you a break. Havinenu is only seven brachos. You'll be able to concentrate on the seven brachos if you know that you'll be able to assure yourself that you can concentrate on the seven brachos. We'll let you do the seven brachos as opposed to the Shemona Esrei brachos. But nowadays, where we don't even have confidence, as the Mechaber and Mama point out in Siman Kuf Aleph, in Shulchan Aruch, we don't even have the confidence that a person can have the Kavan in one bracha, right? The Mechaber over there says that a person who can't have Kavana for all Shemona Esrei should still say Shemona Esrei, but just make sure to have Kavana for the first bracha. And the Rama says that even if you don't have Kavana for the first bracha, because we don't trust people that have Kavana even for the first bracha necessarily, we're not going to be close to them. We're not going to make them daven again. They'll just daven again. They won't have Kavana the second time or the third time or the fourth time. So we recognize that you should have Kavana, but we don't trust people to have Kavana. So we would allow people to daven Habineinu with seven brachas, because we didn't expect that they would have Kavana for 18 brachas. Now that we don't expect people to have Kavana for anything, that's why we allow a chassan to say Kriya Shema on his first night of getting married, which means Dina de Gemara, he was parted from Kriya Shema because he couldn't have the Kavana. So he's saying nowadays, no, he doesn't have Kavana the rest of the year. The rest of his life, he doesn't have Kavana. So therefore, we have him say Kriya Shema on the night that he gets married as well. So the same thing is true with respect to Habineinu. That was only a dispensation if you would say the seven brachos, but with Kavana. But since we can't count even upon that, so therefore we don't allow it. And secondly, the other reason given by the Be'er Halacha is that if we would allow people the dispensation to get away with seven brachos, then nobody would ever say all 18 brachos. They would just, now that they knew that they had a shortened version of Shemona Esrei they can get away with, instead of using it only in exceptional cases, which is the way the din should be, a person would just rely upon this all the time. All the time they would come to basically just rely upon Habineinu. And you wouldn't even gain anything because of the fact that it wouldn't even be said with proper kavanah. So for all those reasons, Habineinu is not done. The one case where he suggests that maybe it could still be done, I'm not sure that he's suggesting that, because this is in sort of the Sifkatan Al from the Mishnah Berurah before he gets to his whole essay in the Be'er Halacha about how his minhag is not to say it anymore. It's not clear whether this mentioned in the Be'er Halacha maybe cancels out what he said in the Mishnah Berurah Sifkatan Aleph. I'm not sure about that. But in the Sifkatan Aleph, the Mishnah Berurah, he says that if a person, getting back to a little bit what we discussed yesterday, a person is approaching the end of the day, it's the very end of the Zaman, and he sees he only has 2 minutes until Shkia, and he knows that it's going to take him 5 minutes to say Shmona Esrei, but he can say Habineinu in a minute and a half. So he can finish Habineinu before Shkia, but he can't finish Shmona Esrei before Shkia, so then the Mishnah Berurah says in such a case he should do Habineinu. So the Aruch HaShulchan, just for the record, happens to disagree with the Mishnah Berurah in this case. I'm not sure. I think the Mishnah Berurah might disagree with the Mishnah Berurah in this case, based on the Minhag HaOlam not to do Habineinu. But he quotes the Tosfos, famous Tosfos, earlier in the Masechta on Dav Zayin Amud Aleph, that says that it was a tremendous bracha neis that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Klal Yisrael when Bilam wanted to curse us, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have had that shazam, then Bilam would have been able to tune into that one split second, or less than a second, of shazam of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and used it to curse Klal Yisrael. So B'nai Yisrael. So the Tosa says, how much of a curse could he have said in one fragment of a second? So he gives a possible curse that he could have said. And then he says, Inami me'akasha yamasko kilalasu be'osasha Inami, since he began at that time, ayamazik afilalacha kein. So whatever would have continued afterwards, it would have counted. It would have all been included within that first second. So some quote this Tosfos says, Araya, that if you begin the Shmona Esrei before the Zman, even if you finish it after the Zman, so it all, everything goes basa vaschol, it all goes after the beginning of the Zman. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that he thinks that we should paskin like that Tosfos, and therefore, even if one doesn't have a lot of time before, they're not going to be able to finish Shmona Esrei before Shkia, they should still start Shmona Esrei before Shkia. But we see the Mishnah Berurah doesn't paskin that way, and holds that it wouldn't necessarily count, and that's why it's better to say Habineinu. But, as I pointed out, I think when push comes to shove, given the Mishnah Berurah's recordation of the minhag, that we don't say Habineinu, we probably wouldn't say Habineinu. But Moshe has a tshuva in Chelek Dalet and Siman Tzadi Aleph, I think Siman Beis, in which he was asked by people who are a school teacher, a Rebbe, was going off to work, and he wanted to know, Maybe he was coming late to Minyan. I don't know if he was davening at home or coming late to Minyan, exactly what the circumstances were. But he said that sometimes if he would say a full psukei dezimah, he would say a full davening, then he'll come late to work, or he'll have to skip breakfast, and then he'll be all cranky, and he won't be able to teach the talmidim well, so he'll have to skip psukei dezimah. It's interesting, not only just to get on work to work on time, but even to make sure he would eat some breakfast. So Moshe says that it's very important. You can't cheat your employer, and you got to get to work on time. And you also can't cheat the kids and do a bad job. So you have to make sure that your stomach is well fed. So Moshe says that, of course, under those circumstances, you can skip Psukei Dezimah. You know, most of Psukei Dezimah. And then he discusses how really Mi'ikar Adin, you should have been able to skip Shmoneh Esrei as well and Daven Havinenu instead, because this is one of those cases where you're in a tremendous rush. So Moshe says that that's not since the minig is that we don't say every. Therefore, it's not you're not going to gain anything from doing Havinenu, and it's okay, and you should still do an entire Shmoneh Esrei. And he has a very interesting formulation. I give Rabbi Boyd credit. I got the Maror Makom from his book. He has a very interesting formulation. Kivan she'enu ragil b'Havinenu ve'enu bakiba. Since he's not used to saying Havinenu, and he's not a bucky in Havinenu, lo yaviach elamashu, he's only going to get a little bit out of it, but ulai lo yaviach klal, maybe he'll get nothing out of it. In other words, there's another, perhaps tertiary consideration, in addition to the ones mentioned by the Mishnah Berurah, that one is not going to even get the benefit of Havinenu by saying it, because of the fact that nowadays our Sidurim essentially have Shmoneh Esrei available, but we don't have Havinenu available. A person wouldn't necessarily even know how to do Havinenu correctly. Could be that's what Moshe is saying. He's probably not even going to be able to do it correctly. So therefore, really Havinenu is off the radar. He points out in his book that the Aruch HaShulchan has a line that maybe that those people are Anshei Chayil. I don't know what the Aruch HaShulchan meant by Anshei Chayil. He assumes he means the soldiers. I'm not sure. But he says, being pressured to go to their work, maybe they should dive in Havinenu. So he pointed out that there's some Sefer Hatzava, Kahalacha, in Eretz Yisrael, which encourages IDF soldiers to say Havinenu. I have no idea. I don't know who wrote the Sefer. I don't know if that's the practice anywhere. Maybe when Rabbi Rafi Peretz, if he comes back to the yeshiva, we can ask him if there's a practice of Israeli soldiers saying Havinenu. I don't know. But for the most part, I'm not aware of Havinenu being being recited Bisman Azeh for these various reasons. I remember I had a friend once who I was at his home for Shabbos, and some people have a practice that I think Shalashudis, that they only say until Mikol Tuvu Lama Yechasreinu and Shalashudis, and don't say the rest. I don't know, some people I think may have this back. So he had a practice. He told me that he never goes in benching beyond the Mikol Tuvu Lama Yechasreinu. So he said, why is it that you never go beyond that? So he said, because I saw that when I was benching, I never had any kavana. I was just saying the words quickly or whatever. So I made up that I would, in return for getting to say less, I would do it. I would make sure to do it with kavana. This way, since I don't have as much to do, so I make sure that I'm able to do it with kavana, and I, in a way that I wouldn't be able to assure my kavana if I had a longer benching. So I don't know. The sentiment that's reflected in the comment of the Be'er Halacha, that one of the reasons why Havinenu is not a good idea is because we may come to rely upon it all the time. And if you put it together with this first comment that people don't have kavana nowadays anyway, I don't know that no matter how much we shorten anything, that we can maybe Yechidei Skula, but for the most part, I would say that I don't know to what degree we can count upon having kavana, even if we shorten everything to the bare minimum. So therefore, if that is the consideration, certainly I would say that we understand the minhag ha'olam and what appears to be the general mainstream practice of not relying upon this formulation of Havinenu. There's more to discuss on the daf, but we'll stop here with those sugyos for the time being. Okay.